ready. It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
It's the 64th episode of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. This week I've got a real treat. I've got a fun interview with J.K. Woodward, artist of such great things as the Star Trek Next Generation, Doctor Who crossover event, Assimilation Squared from IDW. We have a good time talking about both Star Trek and Doctor Who, and he schools me on several things that I didn't know. So I really appreciated that, and I think you'll learn a lot too. He also talks about upcoming projects, which I'm sure you won't want to miss. Then I review this week's comics, followed by Gianluca Glazer joining me for the latest news and previews, and everything wraps up with a look into your local comic shop. There's a lot to get to at warp speed via TARDIS, so let's get to it. Talking today with J.K. Woodward, the artist on the successful Star Trek The Next Generation Doctor Who crossover for IDW. How are you doing today, J.K.?
Great, Wayne. Thanks for having me on.
Good to talk with you. I'm happy to point out the success because there's all kinds of accomplishments that the book has already racked up, including the fact that it sold out before the first issue ever hit the stores, and then that went to a second printing, and the first issue sold out on the Apple iBook chart. And this week, the third printing of the first issue just came in, so I'm very happy with that. It's been a great, fun read, and I got to talk with Scott and David Tipton earlier about it. They seemed a little nervous about it, but man, I was excited. So I want to talk with you about it. Have you heard other reactions? What's the reaction been to the book that you've heard?
It's been overwhelmingly positive. There's been a lot of great things I've been hearing about it. And of course, the numbers that you mentioned, it's hugely successful as far as the numbers that are coming in. Like you mentioned, there's already a third printing of the first issue. And I was happy and gratified to hear how it was doing digitally as well, because digital numbers actually help the comic industry in a lot of ways, mostly because as a comic professional, I've learned that not even my family has seen my comics because they just won't go into comic book stores. So there's a whole audience out there that's not reading comic books that would probably enjoy them if they were accessible to them. Mm-hmm. I think digital does that. So I was happy to hear that there was a large digital numbers, because that usually tells me these generally people that wouldn't normally read comic books that are checking this out.
Right, which is cool. Now, one of the interesting things is there are some fans who simply won't buy comics. They want Star Trek and Doctor Who to be on their television screens. But it seems like this book is one of the ones that's starting to crack that wall and starting to get people turning over and starting to read these things. Because let's face it, this is the first time that these two successful franchises have ever interacted, and it's history.
And this has been a dream for a long time. There's been a lot of fan fiction with Doctor Who crossovers, and there's never been a Doctor Who crossover. Star Trek has done a few crossovers with mixed results, but first time Doctor Who's crossed over with anything. And you see all the fan fiction online, you see the joke t-shirts with the Doctor Who with the Back to the Future and things like that. But this is the first time it was actually done and actually sanctioned by the BBC. So this is the first legit crossover. It's kind of a big deal.
Oh, yeah. Very cool. Now, what was your reaction? Did you say, I want to do that? Did they approach you about doing the art? How did that work?
Oh, I begged for it. I'd been doing Star Trek for a while with IDW. I'd done some Captain's Logs, Alien Spotlights, a lot of one-shots. In between doing the Fallen Angel miniseries that I've been working on, I would take any Star Trek work I could get. And what I would do is just call up and say, you know, what do you got? Any Star Trek work for me? Mm-hmm. And I kind of did that this time. I talked to Chris Ryle, and he said, actually, I got something, but you got to promise to keep your mouth shut about it. And we're going to try to do a Doctor Who crossover. I might have lost consciousness, but when I came to, he said he was going to call me in a couple months, and they were still trying to wrap things up and make it happen. Mm-hmm. And I got a call back, sure enough, a couple months later, and said not only is it going to happen, but the art samples I sent in were chosen, and they wanted me on the book.
Oh, wow.
And those very same art samples I sent in were composited digitally to make the first cover.
Oh, wow.
I'd done a portrait of Picard, a portrait of Matt Smith, Doctor Who. And I had done up a piece with the TARDIS and the Enterprise trapped in a time stream. And just kind of composited all these pictures together and made the first cover.
Very cool, very cool. Now, it sounds like you're a fan both of Star Trek and of Doctor Who.
I'm a huge fan of both.
Wow.
Meaning I've been watching both these shows all my life, literally. I was born in the 70s. Mm-hmm. Both shows, the original series and the Fourth Doctor, were on TV when I was a kid.
Oh.
So I started watching that. And then, of course, the movies and Next Generation came out, so I've been watching that my whole life. There was a gap in Doctor Who for a little while, but then when they came back with the Ninth Doctor, I started watching again. And then kind of going back and checking out the stuff I missed in between the fourth and the ninth. So, yeah, I'm very well-versed on both. I'm a huge fan of both.
Mm-hmm.
So working on this has been a thrill.
Well, it comes through in the art, I have to say, because you get not only the settings and the ships and everything right, but you also get the look of the actors down very well. And that's part of the thing that's a lot of fun to read, is to something that really does well for both franchises. And that must have been tough to do, I would imagine.
Yes and no. I mean, like I said, I'm very familiar with them. It's almost, I would imagine, what it must be like to do impressions.
Mm-hmm.
Key is to just, you know, you focus on the minutiae, the little idiosyncrasies, the Picard maneuver, tugging the shirt.
Mm-hmm.
Things like the Riker always putting his foot up on Data's console on the bridge.
Mm-hmm.
And the Matt Smith Doctor, the 11th Doctor, tends to run around kind of T-Rexing all the time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he always has his kind of hands up, like, about halfway, like he's wading through waist-high water. And these are like the behaviors you watch when you see the show, and if you can get those in the panel, just it automatically relates to people and it feels like you're watching an episode. Or you try to do that as much as you possibly can with the comic book, because you want it to feel like they're finally seeing the actors together.
Mm-hmm. Of course, I got to ask the obvious question. When it comes to Star Trek, which is your favorite Star Trek? And when it comes to Doctor Who, who's your favorite Doctor?
You're not going to like my answers on this, because I...
Okay.
favorite's subjective, and I have trouble with that, coming up with a all-time favorite. I will say this. With Doctor Who, my Doctor has always been the Fourth Doctor. When I think Doctor Who, that's the first image that comes to my head is Tom Baker.
Makes sense.
That's what I grew up with. However, Eccleston was kind of my favorite because he looked like a badass hooligan, you know? He was the only Doctor that I really liked his wardrobe.
Mm-hmm.
He dressed like me. He looked like me. This was my Doctor, you know. But I didn't have time to get attached to him because he was only around for a year.
Mm-hmm.
And then if I had to pick a favorite right now, it's probably Matt Smith, only because he started out like every other Doctor. I hated him at first because he took over. Who the hell is this guy? You know, why is he taking Tennant away? But when I saw, I think the episode was called The Rebel Flesh.
Mm-hmm.
Until then, I didn't feel much about this Doctor, but there was so much range in that, because he went from joking around with his doppelganger one second to screaming at people in his heart-wrenching scene the next second, and Matt Smith showed his range on that episode,
mm-hmm.
and that's when he became my favorite.
Oh.
As far as the series go, I love them all. I'm not the Kirk versus Picard kind of guy, but if I had to choose overall, I'd probably say Next Generation.
Okay. See, I'm with you on the Matt Smith. Matt Smith is honestly the very first Doctor, and I've watched Doctor Who for a long time. He's the first one that I've actually strongly related to. And right off the bat, I felt that for him, because I liked the adventure in him. Always felt David Tennant was dragged kicking and screaming into stuff, and he always seemed angry that people pulled him into doing these things. But Matt Smith was, let's go get him, you know, the Geronimo stuff. I really liked his character, and as far as Trek goes, I'm a Deep Space Nine guy.
Deep Space Nine was great, and the only reason I said overall Next Generation is probably because it's perfect. I'm always thinking of what it's going to get people into Star Trek, and I think it's like the perfect episodal. You know, Deep Space Nine got very into its own mythology at the end, and it made it harder for new people to jump on.
Mm-hmm.
But I enjoyed those stories, especially near the end, especially the last three seasons.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, now, it's really interesting to me. The third book now has come out, and you did some really interesting stuff in there. It's interesting you talk about the Fourth Doctor. We get to see that Doctor in the third issue.
Yeah, and the Captain. And you get to also see Captain Kirk.
Right. Now, the interesting thing about the art style in there, you've largely done a painted style until that point. When we get back to Classic Trek, you go to a more drawn style.
Actually, that wasn't me.
It wasn't you?
No.
Oh, you...
No, I was going to do that. The original plan was I was going to do that, but because of time, we figured it was a good opportunity to get other artists in there to give me time to get a little more lead time, scheduling-wise. So we had the Sharp Brothers come in and do that.
Oh.
At one point, I was going to do that. I was going to change from a painted style to a classic comic book, pen and ink, digital color style.
Mm-hmm.
But no, we had the Sharp Brothers come in, and they've done a lot of the Star Trek work previously, a lot of original series stuff. They're really spot on with their likenesses.
Mm-hmm. Very cool. I didn't see any indication of that in the book. Is that marked in the book someplace?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
Okay. I didn't notice that. I actually thought that it was you that had gone from part to part and switched art styles pretty dramatically. I'm going to say, wow, that must have, you know, that's quite a mental shift to go from a painted style into a drawn style like that.
I've done this before with Fallen Angel. I've switched back and forth. There was one issue in Fallen Angel that was told from a kid's point of view. And when he started talking, I went from painted style into sort of a Bruce Timm style.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Bruce Timm, the guy who did Batman the Animated Series.
Yeah, that's him.
Yeah,
I kind of went into that style. So I've been known to switch styles before, so I was kind of looking forward to doing this issue.
Mm-hmm.
And I hated to pass it on to somebody else, but we're dealing with a really tight deadline on this, and we're also dealing with two property holders that need to approve everything we do.
Mm-hmm.
It was in the best interest of the book to hand that over to somebody else, so give us a couple more weeks, a little breathing room.
That's great.
The Sharp Brothers do a great job. I mean, you got to admit, that was a beautiful sequence.
It was great fun. And, of course, Kirk does the flying kick and all kinds of little, as you talked about, the smaller details that we enjoy so much are in that part, too. So I like about this miniseries a lot that you guys are making it so that fans get the little extra nods that make it fun for us to read. We get to see things and we go, oh, yeah, I remember when they did that. I remember that. I mean, bringing Guinan in was a big surprise to me, and yet it made perfect sense when I saw it. I thought, of course, she's in touch with the universe.
Exactly. Can we talk about that for a second? Because I thought that was brilliant, too. And I've been in touch with Scott and Dave, mostly Scott, I've been talking to throughout this whole process. And I was very excited to hear about Guinan coming in because I talked about this before we started the series. I always felt that Guinan was a Time Lord in the Star Trek universe.
Huh.
Because she had the same kind of wisdom. She had the same age. I don't think she's quite 900, but she's centuries old.
Huh.
And she always had an intuitive nature that wasn't really defined. She knew things, but you never explained exactly how. Like in yesterday's Enterprise, she kind of knew that they were in a different universe and that things weren't right and something happened without... You know, to explain it, something about that felt very Time Lord. There's a feeling in Doctor Who that he has all the answers somehow, but it's not always quite obvious. I always felt Guinan was sort of that character. I always considered her Time Lord. So the fact that Picard wanted this stranger, this Time Lord, on the bridge to go down and meet Guinan, I thought was a brilliant move.
Wow, that is so great. I never put that together. That's neat. That's a great idea. I like that a lot because it certainly explains what's going on. Of course, we haven't gotten into much of that yet. We're at the end of the third issue, which leads me to the question, as far as the fourth issue, do you know when that's going to hit the stores?
I don't honestly know. I do know that I just finished 5, and the way things have been going, we've been staying on a pretty steady schedule, which means 4 will probably be out in 2 weeks.
Okay.
You know, if everything holds true. I think we did this one a little faster, though, so it might be a little longer.
Okay.
But it's not very scientific, is it?
No. Well, you know, art is not very scientific, I have to say. You know, when you're drawing and creating a book like this, you've got schedules, but sometimes the thing fluxes in and out. And one page might take you a day, and another page might take you a couple days. So it's very difficult to keep everything completely on schedule, but yet you've still got to do it.
Well, that's why we got editors.
Yeah.
Get that phone call every once in a while. It gives you a kick in the ass. Sometimes you surprise them and get stuff done early, but either way, as an artist, you just don't even realize it.
Right. I don't want spoilers. I don't want to get you in trouble, but are there parts of the books that are coming up that you know about that you're looking forward to drawing?
Well, yes. Yes.
Okay.
Definitely. I can say that much. Now I have to kind of stammer and be careful and think.
Yeah. Don't get in trouble, please. No matter what. The last thing I want is for you to get in trouble.
No. I've gotten very good at this.
Okay.
I can be a big mouth. Now I can
Okay.
But I will say this. I will say there is some things that we're doing with the Cybermen that are really exciting that I just did. In fact, the last time we were going to have this interview and I wasn't able to do it that day was because I was finishing up issue 5.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll say this, page 20 and 21 on issue 5. When that comes out, guys, look at it. Because that was a really exciting thing. And that's kind of some of the stuff we're doing with the Cybermen. We're also doing some stuff with the Borg and the Cybermen that's coming up in the next issue that's very exciting, and it's something you'll know when you see it. You'll be like, oh, that's what he was talking about.
Well, I was already looking forward to it. Now I can't wait for it to show up. Boy, it's going to be fun to see. Because you guys just seem like you're having a ball with this. It just seems like it's so much fun.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think we get that sense from you as we read the book. That's wonderful for a historical event like this to happen. It's not just you had to do it. You're having a great time doing it.
It's a huge privilege to be doing it. And you've talked to Scott and Dave, and you know what big fans of both properties they are, too. And the fact that everybody involved isn't just fans of one or the other or neither. We're all fans of both. So it's been an absolute joy to work on because of that.
Mm-hmm. Now, of course, this gives you a good reason to go back and watch Star Trek or Doctor Who whenever you need to. You can say this is for your work.
Yeah, it's now considered research. That's what I tell
Oh, great, great. Now, my understanding is there's 12 issues.
It's actually 8.
Oh, okay. All right, I got that wrong. When the 8 issues are done, I mean, are they planning on hardcovers, trades? Because I bought the, and I'm not trying to stop people from buying the individual issues, of course. I want them to buy the individual issues. But based on what I've seen already, I know I'm going to want to get the collected version of this if they make one. Are there any talks about that at this point?
From what I understand, there's going to be 2 4-issue trade paperbacks for this. Then I believe they're collecting both of them in this sort of on-the-buy after that. As far as hardcover, I don't know. I haven't heard anything about that.
Okay. Because they did the Star Trek Legion, I think, came out in hardcover. And that's what makes me wonder if there's going to be one of these, because I just know I'm going to want this to keep. This is great fun.
You know what? I'll ask about that, because if they're not planning to do it, maybe I can talk them into it.
I would.
Hardcover makes sense. You're definitely going to sell enough to make it worth it. Mm-hmm. So I think they should definitely do that.
Another thing, too, in a hardcover like that, you can put some of your extra art that we haven't seen in there, maybe some posters, maybe like a sketchbook that you did or some of the stuff that you've done on the side. It would be great to see all this, because that gives you just a fuller feel for what the process was like that you went through to make this book happen.
Oh, absolutely. And anybody that's followed my career with Fallen Angel knows that on the trade paperbacks, I always throw in those kind of extras. I'm probably a little bit of a pain in the ass to some of the editors at IDW, because I'm always throwing stuff at them saying, can we put this in, can we put this in, because I'm all about the extras. So you're pretty much guaranteed that in the trade paperbacks, you're going to see some sketches and some stuff that you haven't seen elsewhere. And if there is a hardcover that collects it all, definitely. I'll save a little bit for that so that there's even more put in there.
See, now I'm looking forward to that tremendously. I hope it happens.
Not to mention, I take pictures and scan most of the sketches I do at cons. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of what Doctor Who, Star Trek sketches I've done in the 5 months or so I've been working on this.
Wow.
Huge library to add to it.
That'll be a fun book to have. I just can't wait to see it, should it happen. I'll be right there at the cash register with money in hand ready to buy that book. I can't wait. I'm sure this is occupying you full time right now, but are there things that you're going to be working on once this is finished?
Oh, absolutely. Well, nothing signed yet, but I talked to Peter David recently, and we'll be doing another Fallen Angel miniseries.
Right. Okay.
Like I said, nothing's locked down yet. We tend to do one of these miniseries every year, so I'm assuming at this point. And I talked to Peter David, and he has an outline already done. So, looks like we're doing that. And that's something we'll probably start right in on after I'm done this. So it'll probably be out like January or so. And on top of that, I'm doing some things straight to digital. I don't know if you've heard of Chris Robertson's Monkey Brain Comics.
Yes.
Okay. I'll be working with Chris Kopiniak, who did the Nightcrawler miniseries back in 2001. Mm-hmm. And since then, he's been writing some Marvel adventures, stuff like that. Well, me and him worked together on a concept he came up with called Behemoth. And that's all I'm going to say about that right now. But it's going to be pretty exciting. We'll be making official announcements around November for that. It's going to be a 4-part miniseries available through Monkey Brain.
Cool.
Also doing something that I got actually Mike Norton to work with me on. Also, again, Chris Kopiniak is doing the writing for me. And this was a concept I came up with called Steamwitch. And we're going to be debuting that probably around the same time in the autumn. And that'll be through Double Feature, Tim Seeley and Mike Norton's app that they created for their digital comic website. Basically, every month they put out 2 8-page stories. And they created their own app to go with it. And the app for this is not just a reader. The interesting thing about it is there are 4 icons at the top, and you can deconstruct the page. So you can see the page as pencils, you can see it with the inks without colors, and you can see it with the colors, and then you can see it with the lettering and the colors and everything like a regular comic.
Wow.
Yeah, so I think it's doublefeature.com. So it's something definitely worth checking out. If you enjoy comics and if you enjoy the process of comics, it's a cool app. They create the app, and then they put the material on it once a month. So I'll be doing something there, and basically what I'll be doing is having Mike Norton draw the characters, and I'll be doing the inking and the coloring of the characters, but I'll also be doing fully painted backgrounds on it, so it'll kind of have that cool cell animation look to it. Mm-hmm. And then with the app as it is, with the deconstructing it, it'll be a little different than just pencils, inks, and colors, because we'll be showing deconstructing a page as Mike Norton's pencils of the characters with his notes on it, and then my backgrounds added in, and then the inks and the colors. It'll be much more interesting because there'll be like a couple of extra layers in there.
Wow. Now, I got to ask you, of course, people have different opinions on this. When you're doing the work for digital versus paper, do you do things differently or do you do the same thing on both medium?
Yes. It's the same thing on both medium at this time because nothing's really being, besides what I said about double features, nothing's really been designed for digital comics that makes it much different than reading paper right now. Mm-hmm. Right now, that's the case. Now, there might be audio put in, there might be animation put in, they might be able to move foreground figures so you can see backgrounds. maybe someday there'll be other stuff done with digital to make it strictly digital. But right now, you pretty much draw it for both mediums, because the readers are pretty much like holding a hard copy.
Mm-hmm.
You can zoom in on panels, yes, but that's about the only difference.
Mm-hmm.
And that and the double page splash. But
mm-hmm.
I'm hoping technology catches up and there's a way to keep the double page splash, because I don't want to see that go.
Yeah.
One of my favorite artists is J.H. Williams, and he does those beautiful double page mm-hmm. layouts, and I'm going to miss that, you know. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. Batwoman. He does wonderful stuff with Batwoman.
Oh, yeah.
Just great stuff. Now, before I let you go, I've got one more question. Of course, Wikipedia, that fount of knowledge, had something that fascinated me when I was doing a little research before I got to talk with you, is that you were going to be a rock musician at one point?
Well, yeah, that might be a little blown up. I was in a punk band for a brief time in high school, but that's about as far as it went. And, yeah, there was talk about it. But the problem with bands is you have to depend on your bass player, your guitarist. You know, there's always somebody that's going to screw up and not show up to rehearsal, or it's going to screw up your gig, or, you know, show up drunk or something. But the problem is you have to find three or four people that you can mesh with, and you have to count on them, as well as so many other things. As an artist, I don't even use an inker. I can just do it myself, and then if I screw up, it's on me.
Mm-hmm.
Something about that seemed a lot more attractive to me. You know, just count on myself and not have to worry. I felt like my fate was in my hands a little more than if I was in a band.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think I was ever really serious about that anyways. That came from my friend Mike Colbert, who I worked on a book called Crazy Mary with, wrote bio for me, and he put that in there. Except he's a writer, so it was much nicer the way he put it. And Wikipedia just summed it up like that. But he put it in there to be quirky and funny. So if you go to my website, you can see the original as it was written.
Oh, okay. Very cool. Well, I'm glad that the artist gig worked out, because I'm really enjoying the art that you're doing. I can't wait to see your future projects, so I'm really looking forward to them.
Well, thanks. Thanks so much. And thanks for asking about the future projects, because those are creator-owned stuff that I'm really excited about.
Cool. Do you think that's the way of the future, too, doing your creator-owned things? I mean, it's ironic that you say that, because here you are working on two of the biggest franchises in history, and yet you want to do your own stuff as well. So it's kind of an interesting balance.
Yeah, but these big franchises, somebody created them. I mean, that was Lindberry's dream. So you never know what the future holds. But I think creator-owned for me personally is something I definitely want to do. It doesn't mean I'm going to abandon. I'll always be doing Star Trek books, believe me. But as long as they'll have me do it, I'll always be doing it.
Mm-hmm.
But I've been doing this now professionally for almost 10 years, so I feel like it's time for me to get my own ideas out there and see how they do.
Cool. Well, I'm looking forward to that. I'm going to have to really follow up on those, because I'd love to see what's rolling around in that brain of yours, because you've got very strong artistic sensibilities, and I'd really like to see what you have in mind.
Well, I can't wait to show you.
Okay.
I'll tell you that, and it'll be an exciting fall for me, I think.
Okay. Well, JK, it's been fun talking with you, and I'm really looking forward to getting to see more of your stuff in the future. So much success.
Thanks, Wayne.
And there's one more thing that Mr. Woodward would like you to know. You can listen to his podcast. It's called JK's Happy Hour. It's on iTunes, and if you say JK's Happy Hour, you can find it. Or you can go to thetaylornetwork.wordpress.com. That's spelled thetaylornetwork.wordpress.com. I've given it a listen, and it's a fun podcast, so be sure to add that to the list of podcasts you never miss. He also has a website at jkwoodward.com.
Simon, you might be able to answer this. Who the f*** is Greg Capullo, and where has he been all my life?
God, it's you, the Black Canary, wanted for murdering a man with one punch.
I can only assume that when Quillen March begins a sketch, he draws two huge orbs in the centre of the page and goes from there.
JT Krull will apparently be no longer writing Green Arrow.
Yeah! Yeah.
And Superman says the line, teeth. Filthy flying teeth.
Flipping boys.
Flipping
Boys Comics and Entertainment podcast available from ThwippingBoys.com and iTunes.
Faster than a speeding bullet. More powerful than a locomotive. Able to leap tall buildings at a single bound. Look, up in the sky, it's a bird.
It's a plane.
It's Wayne's Comic Review.
Strange visitor from another planet who came to Earth with powers and abilities far beyond those of mortal men. Who can change the course of mighty rivers, bend steel in his bare hands. And now, another exciting episode.
And let's have a look at the comics that came out this week. The book of the week for me is Before Watchmen Rorschach number 1. I've been very pleasantly surprised with the Before Watchmen event, which is doing very well as far as sales go, no matter what Mr. Moore would like to have happen. We're revisiting the franchise via prequels, and the several great name creators have been doing a wonderful job with the books. I've been sure to get them in my weekly stack of stuff. This book, Rorschach number 1, gives us a lot of background on the character who has been one of the most popular Watchmen of all time. This comic isn't really for younger readers among us. It's very adult, a place where the character feels right at home. Now, Brian Azzarello, who's doing the writing, is probably best known for his 100 Bullets books, as well as his current successful take on Wonder Woman, the first to be popular in quite some time. Lee Bermejo, who created Batman Noel, now for me a holiday classic, is doing the artwork. The two of them have worked together on a gripping book about the Joker. So this is a team of heavy hitters, and you can tell that reading the book. The first thing I need to mention is the tremendously stunning cover. That's my favorite in the event so far. You actually see Rorschach appearing in his own mask, and I really like that a lot. The story's a powerful one, showing us that a human crime fighter doesn't always come away from a fight unscathed. We suffer with our hero as he literally takes a serious beating while in the seamy underbelly of crime in this city. The most gripping part of the issue happens during a conversation between Rorschach, who happens not to be wearing his mask for once, and a waitress in a diner. After explaining his injuries by saying he was mugged the night before, Rorschach says, "The muggers, they made a mistake." The waitress responds, "Meaning you didn't have anything on you." Rorschach returns with a dramatic line, "Meaning I'm not dead." If I were those criminals, I'd relocate to a different city fast. Like all the other Before Watchmen comics to date, this one is a worthy successor to the original series. If you haven't begun reading them, I highly recommend them to you. Here are some quick thoughts on the DC books that were out this week from the New 52. First, Nightwing takes on Paragon from the Republic of Tomorrow. Then Birds of Prey try to resolve Poison Ivy's rebellion. Catwoman number 12 once again has the Penguin involved. Red Hood and the Outlaws number 12 continues the group's outer space adventure. Then came Green Lantern with a startling revelation about Hal Jordan towards the end of the book. Next, Green Lantern Corps number 12 by Peter J. Tomasi shows the end of one corps. Wonder Woman features the birth of a child, while Batwoman number 12 features the return of J.H. Williams III doing art. Captain Atom focuses on the people around the character and their fondest desires. Supergirl journeys to the bottom of the sea. Meanwhile, Legion of Superheroes battles the Dominators, one of my very favorite DC alien races. Blue Beetle takes on the Blood Beetle. And finally, DC Comics Presents focuses on Kid Flash. Good stuff all around. Other books worth picking up this week included Green Lantern, the animated series, number 5, and Shade, number 11 of 12 from DC Comics, Avengers Academy, number 35, and Daredevil, number 17 from Marvel, Extermination, number 3, and Peanuts, volume 2, number 1 from Boom Studios. Image has Fatale, number 7, and Walking Dead, number 101. IDW provides Jericho, season 4, number 1, and Bloodshot, number 2, and Harbinger, number 3 come out from Valiant. And those are the books that came out this week.
Okay, it's time for this week's news and previews, and with me, as always, is Gianluca Glazer. How are you doing today, Gianluca?
I'm doing very well. Thank you, Wayne.
Good, good. I guess we should start off with the big news of the past week.
Yes.
And that's the passing of Joe Kubert, which I'm still really, really sorry about. He was a great comics writer and artist, and he created a lot of things that gave me a lot of enjoyment over the years. What's your take on that?
Well, yeah, he was 85 years old, but still, he is a legend in the industry. He contributed so much with the Kubert School that trained and developed a lot of great artists. He even worked up until the end, because he still has a art book that's coming out in the near future, as well as, I believe he's contributing, along with one of his sons, to one of the Before Watchmen books, I believe the Night Owl one.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's very sad. He was a member of the Hall of Fame for both the Eisner Awards and the Harvey Awards. And in a career of over 70 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, not many comics people last that long.
No, not at all. And are still relevant, like he was. Mm-hmm. DC co-publishers Dan Didio and Jim Lee released the following statement. For those of us who knew him personally, as well as those of us who knew him primarily for his remarkable talent and impact on our industry over the years, Joe Kubert was part of the DC family. On behalf of our executive team, as well as everyone at DC Entertainment who cares about Joe and the whole Kubert family, we send our prayers, our sympathy, and our deepest appreciation for everything he's contributed to comics over the course of his life and career. Until the very end, Joe was creating art that will live on for generations, and we will all miss him deeply.
Mm-hmm. It was so dynamic, his art style. I mean, it just jumped off the page at you. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to miss that. Of course, his sons hopefully are carrying on some of that tradition.
Yeah.
So we haven't seen the last of the Kubert name in comics. God, just amazing. I just always hate it when a bright light goes out.
Yeah, it's very sad.
Okay, other news that we've got?
Yes, some interesting stuff. Fox, which has the rights to the Daredevil movie, could find itself reverting back to Marvel. The way these studio deals work is that you have to keep a project active and have stuff come out. And it had been a while since there had been a Daredevil movie, which wasn't really good. So plans to kind of bring it back for Fox have fallen apart. And if it doesn't come out within the next couple of years, then the rights revert back to Marvel, and then Marvel can release it, which they've had a pretty successful track record for movies.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting to me that they're anxious to get their properties back. For a long time, they were very anxious to sell them because that was income.
Sure.
But now, of course, they're trying to get these things back. Fantastic Four they want back. They want Spider-Man back. Although, I don't know, the latest movie did okay, it wasn't great, but I'm just going to be curious to see. They're trying to get all these things back so they can do it now.
Yeah.
All right, other news that we've got.
Sure, absolutely. Alan Moore has apparently turned down $2 million to endorse the Before Watchmen series.
Really?
That's according to Alan Moore.
Oh, okay.
But it is interesting if it is true. I mean, there could be some truth to that. I wouldn't be surprised if somebody threw money at him to endorse the Before Watchmen books. But, yes, of course, Alan Moore is sticking to his guns. He didn't take the money, and he thinks it sucks.
Oh. Okay, well, at least that hasn't changed.
That has not changed, no. The Boys by Garth Ennis, popular series from Dynamite, is coming to an end in November with issue 72.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I know. One of those books that you thought would never end, you know?
Yeah, because when we used to work, the guy that was in charge of the department, the one book that he wanted was The Boys. And I used to, just because I was getting a discount where I was, I would buy him copies of that and give it to him. And then finally he got to the place, though, he told me he wasn't really interested in what they were doing anymore, and I could stop buying them. And at that point I thought, uh-oh, the book's in trouble. So I guess they're running out of ideas.
I guess so, yeah. And following the end of The Boys, Garth Ennis is going to bring back the third and final miniseries for Battlefields.
Hmm. Good.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
The CW network is putting together a TV show called Arrow.
Mm-hmm.
Have you heard about that?
Yes.
Well, they announced that Torchwood star John Barrowman is going to be joining the cast for it.
I wonder what he's going to play, do they say?
No, they don't, actually. There's a big speculation whether he's going to play DC's superhero or not.
If I know Mr. Barrowman, he's going to be kissing the lead actor. He kissed the guy on Nerdist not too long ago, so he's known for that these days.
That'll be
yeah.
There's a new startup comic book publisher called Contraband Comics. And it has decided to enter the market by focusing on digital distribution with iVerse as the new company's exclusive digital distributor.
Mm-hmm.
It started by John Goff, who's worked on Spawn and Halo Evolution. He formed the company as an outlet for creator-owned comic book projects. He gives a quote here explaining his digital-first strategy. I love comics, good old-fashioned print comics, as well as anyone. But we will be working to make each of our books available to retailers moving forward. But as we launch, our focus will be on digital distribution.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, there's cost issues involved. Mm-hmm.
Well, when you think how much you have to spend to get a book printed, and if you just provide it digitally.
Yeah. You have to print a certain amount and sell a certain amount to make back your money as far as paying artists and advertising and previews, as well as print.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty tough, so good luck to him.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I'll hit him up, ask him for work. He thinks he's a good promo guy.
Mm-hmm.
NBC has added Hench to its development slate. It's based on a 2004 graphic novel released by AIT Planet Lars.
Mm-hmm.
It was written by Adam Beachman, and the artwork was done by Manny Bello.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a concept about an ordinary guy who is forced by dire economic circumstances to tempt for supervillains. So this project was optioned originally back in 2009, originally as a movie vehicle for Danny McBride.
Cool.
Interesting, yes. On a new TV series focusing on superheroes.
Mm-hmm.
And just supervillains.
Well, you know, they've got a built-in audience, and I'm kind of thinking they want that to start with. Mm-hmm. You know, Green Arrow has a current book going on right now, hence the Arrow series. I think what they're trying to do is trying to get those people watching the show. So it's going to be interesting to see all these different things going on. I'm going to be fascinated, especially now with things being cheaper to do these kinds of effects and things like that.
Right.
I think we'll see more of that instead of less for now.
That'll be interesting, yeah. I encourage it. I look forward to it.
Mm-hmm.
Heroes was kind of like that, but not based on any particular universe.
Right.
So apparently there's not going to be any more Butcher Baker the Righteous Maker from Image Comics.
No.
Seems to be a little spat going on between Joe Casey and artist Mike Huddleston.
Mm.
When asked about the delay, Joe Casey said that he has been busy with other projects for television, but he also mentions that Mike Huddleston has also been late in terms of the artwork.
Mm.
So Mike responded back about how he gets paid so little to work on the book that he's had to take on other projects.
Mm.
He also mentions that Joe Casey kind of dumped on him.
Mm-hmm.
And basically he stated that there's been a communication breakdown and there's not going to be any more issues with the book.
Mm-hmm.
That's a shame. I hope they can mm-hmm. figure it out, but who knows. Mm-hmm.
I hate it when interpersonal things happen and it stops a book from going on. I really, yeah. You know, you would think that there's money to be made there and one would kind of focus on that and put interpersonal stuff aside.
Yeah.
Well.
And you mentioned last week about possibly Avengers Academy being a Joss Whedon TV series idea.
Yeah.
Well, unfortunately, Marvel is canceling Avengers Academy with issue number 39.
Yeah, I heard about that. I'm really sorry to hear that. The interesting thing is I'm going to talk with Christos Gage for next time. So I'm going to, you know, I won't press him a lot on what's going on with it, but right. I'm reading a lot of stuff about how, well, he called the current storyline Final Exam, and that right there worried me.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was a sign that he knew things were coming to an end. At least he's getting to wrap things up. Now, the word is that the characters might continue on. What Marvel seems to do with his books is relaunch them with a new creative team, with him having nothing to do with it.
Sure, that's a very big possibility.
I never understood why that book didn't sell better. It was a very character-driven book. I liked what was going on. Now, granted, they were not the big names. You had Hank Pym, who's Giant Man, and he's involved. But I couldn't understand why it didn't do a lot better than it did. It was a good book. Had this come out around the time of the Teen Titans or the earlier Adventures of the X-Men, I think this book would have been a smash. But these days, I guess people aren't looking for that anymore.
That's interesting. I don't know if the sales were that bad, or at least enough to cancel the book. It's possible, like you said, they're going to just relaunch it, just like they have with a lot of other series. A whole new creative team, maybe tied into a possible series by Joss Whedon.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's the kiss of death when I like something, and that was my favorite of the mainstream Marvel books. So I won't mention any more if I like a mainstream Marvel book.
Okay. That is it for news for me.
I thought I'd mention something. You and I are always talking about Adventure Time.
Yes.
And how that does really well for Boom Studios. Of course, it's based on the show from Cartoon Network. The guy who does a lot of the writing and storyboarding for Adventure Time is developing his own indie comic.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Thomas, and I don't know how to pronounce it, Herpich, I guess, H-E-R-P-I-C-H. It says on Newsarama he's a favorite among fans of indie comics for surreal, expressive books such as Cusp and Gongwanadon, neither of which I've ever read. Mm-hmm. He's also known for writing and storyboarding many episodes of Adventure Time, including Goliad, BMO, Noir, and Thank You. And he's returning with a book called White Clay, a magazine-sized collection of short stories involving everything from Kafka to cauldrons. So it's going to be interesting to see about that. He's got a name, although I have to tell you, I don't know all that many people who know him. Adventure Time is a big deal. I think if I was him, I would put in big letters, from Adventure Time.
Yeah,
that's what I would do. So I'm going to have to pick that up and see what that's like, because I literally have not seen his stuff. And of course, with the success of Adventure Time, and I've watched a couple of episodes. I'm not a regular viewer of it, but it's fascinating to me what he'll come up with. So I just thought that was something worth mentioning, especially with the success of Adventure Time. And it crosses over all kinds of age barriers and gender barriers. So it's going to be fascinating to see what he does with that.
Oh, you just made me remember one other bit of news.
Okay.
Clint Magazine is now going to be labeled, at least on the magazine, Mark Millar's Clint
Magazine. I guess Mark.
His name is pronounced Mark Millar.
Yeah,
part of Marvel. I like to say Marvel.
Yeah.
So, yes, he's now throwing his name on the magazine, hoping to, I guess, attract more sales.
Yeah, I guess he's more popular than the magazine is, so.
Yes.
We'll do that. So, well, we'll give Mr. Millar, you know, some credit and hope that he can get that magazine selling. These days, magazines are a tough sell because you can go online and get that same stuff for free.
I know.
Mostly. Or if you can buy the comics, if you can be paying.
It's more timely.
Yeah.
You're on online news.
See, people don't understand the printing process. Huh?
No, your podcast as well.
Yeah. See, the thing is, when you understanding the print process is you have to write it, you have to edit it, you have to put it together, and then you got to go to the printer. It's got to be printed, shipped.
It's a 3-month period of time.
Yeah, this is why, like,
story becomes on page.
Yeah. And I'm really sorry about that, too, because the day has come with where instantaneous communications. You just can't put things together as fast as somebody can fling up a tweet or a Facebook post or something like that. So I think the day is over for most magazines. There might be exceptions, but not much.
Yeah, I kind of miss the days that I used to get my entertainment news from magazines. And I used to, as a kid, cut out certain pictures and post them on my wall and stuff. And that is not the deal anymore.
No.
There, soon to be.
Okay, any books that you're looking forward to?
Certainly. There's some interesting stuff. This is kind of interesting. Dark Horse Presents number 15 goes on. This is all for August 22nd.
Okay.
But we have Dark Horse Presents number 15. Arvin Nelson's critically acclaimed Rex Mundi returns with artist Juan Ferreira.
Mm-hmm. Ah. Well, however it's pronounced.
Yes. Oh, also Neil Adams kicks off a new chapter of Blood.
Oh, boy.
I know.
Oh, boy.
We all wanted to see that.
Oh, boy. Okay.
There's going to be a new Lobster Johnson one-shot, Prayer of Neferu, by Mike Mignola.
Mm-hmm.
That's interesting. Mm-hmm. On DC side, they have Batman Incorporated number 3 from Grant Morrison. Who's going to be leaving comics in a year from now?
Well, DC and...
He's going to be leaving, superheroes.
Yeah, he's going to do his own creator-owned stuff from here on.
Yep. We have, before Watchmen, Dr. Manhattan number 1 debuting.
Mm. Mm.
Your favorite writer.
Oh, boy.
J. Michael.
Yeah.
We have Justice League Dark number 12 from Jeff Lemire, and DC's finally collecting the Swamp Thing New 52 trade for the first 6 issues.
Mm-hmm.
So
I'm surprised they didn't make that a hardcover, to be honest with you.
I'm surprised too, but I guess Swamp Thing and Animal Man, they don't get kind of the hardcover treatment. If you look at previews, they're not one of the first books that you see. Obviously, Snyder's other book, Batman, is front and center.
Well, he's probably selling about twice as many Batmans as Swamp Things, but
yeah, or possibly even 3 times as many.
Mm-hmm.
IDW has a couple of interesting books. Rocketeer Cargo of Doom number 1.
Yeah.
The first issue of the miniseries written by Mark Waid.
Yeah.
So that'll be good, too, because, you know, I was kind of getting tired of the Rocketeer Adventures anthologies. Just getting 22 pages with 3 or 4 stories in them,
mm-hmm.
and it was all kind of repeating after a while. You can only pay homage. You couldn't do, like, a long-running story. You couldn't have anything other than homages to the Rocketeer.
Yeah, I don't think people were editing them to look for similarity in content. I think when they got somebody to come in and do something, they just printed it as it was, and I think that was a mistake, although it was wonderful to see the Rocketeer.
It was great, and I love the first miniseries, but then by the second set of miniseries that they did, it's kind of getting redundant. You can only do so much with so little pages, so it's good to see the 4-issue series that's going to actually have a full story.
Mm-hmm.
IDW also has Mars Attacks number 3
mm-hmm.
coming out. And Boom Studios got Adventure Time number 7.
Speaking of that show.
Yeah. And that's all that stood out for me. I didn't see anything else by the other publishers that warranted saying anything.
Yeah, this week is not what I consider to be one of the hottest ones. Although there is one I've got to mention, one called Hero Worship, which is a great book. It's done by the creator of some things like Fuzz, and I think he's working on different other projects, but very, very good. I read the first issue of that, really interesting. It's about if superheroes were real, what would the fans be like?
Mm-hmm.
And it's a very good story. I really liked it. It was such a good thing. I can't wait to get my hands on that one. That was a good book. That one comes out, it seems like, every 2 months. It doesn't seem to come out monthly, unfortunately. It could come out monthly as far as I'm concerned. Then there's Rachel Rising number 10, which is a really strange book about people coming back from the dead. They're not necessarily zombies, but they're women kind of crazy characters. So it's just interesting stuff on that. I like that a lot. Then we also have, there's a book that I just kind of wonder sometimes people, what they come up with to make these books. There's one called Cave Woman Gangster number 1.
What?
Yeah, I looked that up. It's
what
from a
company that.
It's called, run by a group called Amaral Entertainment, a guy by the name of Rob Durham. The thing that's interesting about it is we like gangster books, we like caveman books. So what do? We put them together and then we make it a woman. So they even have a jungle nation and stuff like that where things are going on. There's bands of juveniles severing power lines. They don't realize what that does to everybody and kinds of things like that. So it's only a 3-issue miniseries. I think that was a wise idea. But I just find that funny. Whether I'll actually find a book. There's so many books I can't find anymore. Like Extermination from Boom. I can't find anybody who sells that, even though I order it.
Hmm.
It drives me crazy. I'm going to have to go digital on those so I can buy them. Then our favorite, Mr. Miller, Brilliant number 4, which the last couple issues haven't been all that brilliant, I have to tell you. Then Super Crooks number 4 by the same guy. So those are kind of coming out from Marvel. Venom, which I like, Rick Remender, who's going to take over Captain America soon, was giving Captain America, interestingly enough, a Kirby spin, which I thought was good. He's going back to the old days in the like 60s, early 70s Kirby, where Captain America fought a lot of sci-fi type people. So that's kind of interesting. I guess he's trying to get away from what's been done recently with him being a kind of a spy character. And then from Image, we've got Super Dinosaur from Mr. Kirkman. They're also reprinting Walking Dead 97, 98, and 99. So those things are going on. And speaking of Mr. Kirkman, I think the Image Comics should be Robert Kirkman's Image Comics a lot of the time because they do a lot of his stuff. There's Invincible 94, which is heading towards 100, so we'll get to see some of that stuff. From IDW, Star Trek Ongoing number 12. Believe it or not, it's been a year that's been coming out. So from DC, then we go down the bunch that I like. All-Star Western, which is good, number 12. These are all number 12s, of course, from DC. Batman The Dark Knight with Greg Hurwitz and David Finch, one of my all-time favorites of Batman. If Scott Snyder and Greg Capullo weren't doing Batman, this would probably be my favorite Batman book. Flash number 12, Fury of Firestorm, The Nuclear Men. Green Lantern, New Guardians, which is pretty good. I'm surprised how good that is. Savage Hawkman, which Mr. Liefeld has surprised me, although I understand he's not going to be doing that book much longer or any books for DC. I think he's leaving DC.
Yeah, I heard he's leaving Grifter already.
Yeah. Superman 12, Teen Titans 12, Voodoo. Voodoo's probably one of the least of the bunches that's out there. So.
I'm surprised it's still around.
So am I. There's word that they're going to chop another 3, and I figured that one, Grifter, and I can't remember what the other one. There's a third one, my guess would be, but it's not something urgent. I mean, they might surprise me and pull something else out, but those two, I think, are goners. We'll see what happens with other stuff. But Blue Beetle's actually not too bad. I thought that one was going to go, but it's actually picking up, so I like that book a lot. Oh, iVampire. I think the other one will probably be iVampire. Those will be the 3.
That's sad.
Yeah, it's a good book. When I go and talk to people, those 3 are the books that people say, oh, I kind of was interested, but I don't buy them anymore. And I'm kind of like, ooh, boy, that's not a good sign.
Yeah.
Okay, and on that note, we'll call it quits for this week, and we'll talk with you again next week, Gianluca.
All right. Thanks, Wayne.
Thank you. Let's have a look at what's new in your local shop this week. I talked about Adventure Time with Gianluca Glazer just a few moments ago, and there's actually a t-shirt available for fans of the show. It's called I'm on a Shirt, and it's red. I hope that doesn't mean what Star Trek means when you have a red shirt, but you might want to get your Adventure Time shirt for about $15.99. Then there are t-shirts from Amazing Spider-Man. There's one called Hang Time, and it's black, and there's one called Saul Good, and it's silver.
Those crazy angry birds are back with a space 16-inch blackbird plush, a 16-inch purple bird plush, and a 16-inch red bird plush. Avengers has some interesting and expensive things for you to buy. There is a group leather guitar strap for $40 and a logo leather guitar strap for the same price. There's also a Captain America head knocker for $22, along with Iron Man and Nick Fury head knockers. There's also a Thor head knocker to boot. There is a movie represent charcoal hoodie for about $60, and that comes in three sizes, as well as a solid shield navy t-shirt. There's a Batman Toon Tumblers box set for about $40 as well. For fans of Big Bang Theory, there's a comic cover t-shirt for XL and XXL. Those of us who are fans of the show are expected to have the pounds on, I guess. Captain America also has a laser-cut keyhole keyring. There's also T-Cap's navy t-shirt for about $27. Kind of expensive. There's Catwoman's Secret Wishes costume, medium, small, and extra. There's also the Dark Knight and Robin by Miller t-shirt. There's a Joker by Miller t-shirt, a Dark Knight Rises Bane head knocker, a Bane subfront snapback cap, a Batman head knocker, and a panel face snapback cap. There's also a Silhouette by Miller, and there's also DC Hero Clicks with the Justice League and a Fast Forces six-pack. For the Disney fans among us, there's Mickey Jack Skellington, Jack Sparrow, Monster, and Tron UDFs, and a Traditions NBX Mayor figure and Oogie Boogie figure. Doctor Who fans, you're not left out this week either. There's an 11th Doctor Sonic Screwdriver Keychain Torch for $15, a 4th Doctor Bobblehead, a Dalek Eye Sounds Torch, a Dalek Paradigm action figure, and a USB desk protector. You'll also be able to get a K9 Bobblehead, an orange Dalek talking plush, a projection wash, a Serpent Crest audio CD volumes 1 and 2, that's Tsar Wars, T-S-A-R Wars, and Broken Crown, then volumes 3 and 4 and 5. 3 is Aladdin Time, 4 is Hexford Invasion, and 5 is Survivors in Space. You can also get a TARDIS 750ml water bottle, a bobblehead with sound of the TARDIS, a TARDIS ice bucket, and a TARDIS smart safe. There's a Gotham Girls Batgirl costume, medium for about $55. Always like the black costume, so that's cool. There's a Green Lantern Toon Tumblers box set for about $40. There's Jay and Silent Bob Get Old UK DVD for about $20. There's a Marvel Comic action figure 2-pack set for about $27. Then we get a Star Trek Enterprise plush for about $25. And the thing I always like to get, the Ships of the Line 2013 wall calendar for about $15 from Star Trek. From Star Wars, we get Chewbacca Back Buddy for about $45. A Darth Vader light-up lightsaber keychain. And a Luke Skywalker light-up lightsaber keychain for about $15. There's an R2-D2 Back Buddy for about $50. You can get the Rebel Princess t-shirts that are black. And you can get the Stormtrooper back buddy, as well as the Wicket, the Ewok back buddy. Then there's a Yoda back buddy, and there's a light-up lightsaber keychain for Mr. Yoda as well. There are Tonner dolls from DC, which has Star Sapphire. There's also a Marvel Electra doll and a Marvel Rogue doll. Twilight Zone fans will want to get the Harry Bemis bobblehead, the Icons bobblehead, and if you're like the Venture Brothers, you'll want to get the 3¾-inch Samson action figure. There's an interesting little Watchmen series of things that are out. T-shirts that have Dr. Manhattan on them with the symbol, and they also have Rorschach t-shirts, number one. There's also a Michael Turner Wonder Woman t-shirt as well. And, of course, what would it be like if we didn't end up on zombies? There is a Walking Dead Little Girl Zombie Mouth Prosthetic for $12.99 and a Walking Dead Screaming Corpse Zombie Adult Mask for only $45. And that's what came into the store this week. And that's a wrap for this episode of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Be back next week when I have an interview with Christos Gage from Sunset and Avengers Academy. But until then, keep reading your comics.
Tell me if this sounds familiar. You hacked League systems, disobeyed protocol, and endangered your lives. And your initiative resulted in the capture of three escaped felons, proving Warden Strange runs Bell Rev as a cover for criminal activity. Well done.